Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 426. Well, we are here. It is the end of the year. After this episode, we will not have another episode for 2 weeks. I know it's going to be hard for you guys. Just kidding. It's going to be hard for me. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll probably just catch up on email like I said I was going to do. This week we've got a great program. I've got a wonderful piece from the Illinois Lodge of Research, the Triple Tau and Freemasonry, a deep dive into some really great occult symbology. I think you're going to really like it. In addition, just a little bit of news. We'll catch up on some of that. And if we have time, I'm going to read a piece. It is kind of a reread, if you will, of something I read several years ago, but it's in context to something that's going on in my life right now, and we've also got a brand spanking new Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison. So, first things first, I gotta pay the bills. Please consider supporting this show. You do that through going to WCYpodcast.com, click on support the show. We've got three ways to do that. We have three tiers when it comes to producing this show. You can contribute $2 a month, $5 a month, or $10 a month on the platform of your choice, whether that's PayPal, subscriptions, or you can do it through Patreon as well. All the links are there on Support the Show. You can see what you get. I'll put your name on the website forever, unless you tell me not to. A thank you card in the mail, and even a producer's pin will come to you in the mail, along with the other two items as well. So consider doing that. The largest thank you in the world goes out to our current supporters. We have a list of folks who are actively supporting us, as well as people who have supported us in the past. And so my heart goes out to you guys and everybody out there. If you're enjoying this program today, then thank yourself and all of the other folks who are assisting in producing this podcast, because we can't do it without you. So there's that. We have a couple other ways to support this program. You can straight buy a producer's pin if you want, or a Mason's Lady decal. I think I said it last time, but I've only got one, maybe two left. I think it's just one. We also have the It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry, a book that I co-wrote with Brother John Ruark of the Masonic Roundtable. And additionally, you can support us through two other programs. Franklin's Fortune, which is not a collectible card game. It is a deck-building game. Difference there is that you're not going out to Walmart or Target buying booster packs. Everything you need to play is in the box, and it's fantastic. I want you to go to the website, WCYpodcast.com, click on Our Friends, click on Franklin's Fortune, read all about it. If you use the promo code WCY, you get $5 off your order. You've got just enough time to squeeze it in to get, maybe you can get it by Christmas, maybe you can't. I'm not really sure on their shipping schedule, but it makes a great gift. And lastly, the Great Books Program. Our good friend and brother, Scott Hambrick, who we had on the program about a year and a half ago, started his own Great Books program, and it's phenomenal. So to learn more about that, WCYpodcast.com, one last time, Great Books program under Our Friends. Check all that stuff out to help support this program. And wow, I think that's it. Maybe that might be record time. So the first thing I need to do for everybody is drop the big news. What's the big news? Well, here is the big news. You all might know that this podcast is underneath a legal entity called WCY Media LLC, and we have to do that just so that we protect our content and make sure that we can keep making this program for everybody and not get in trouble and follow the law. So under WCY Media, we had a press release for immediate release. WCY Media is proud to announce that Laudable Pursuit by the Knights of the North will be available for the first time ever as an audiobook. Laudable Pursuit, originally released in 2006, has gone on to become a textbook on how to attempt to correct the course of Freemasonry. Countless lodges around the globe have used this book to reset their course. In this WCY production, the book comes alive. It was read by various voice talents, all of whom are members of the craft. We're extremely proud and lucky to have the editor himself, Chris Hodapp, as part of the voice talent. Laudable Pursuit, the audiobook, will be available from WCY Media, LLC, and Audible.com. All proceeds from the sale of this book will be donated, all of them, to the Masonic Library and Museum of Indiana. So what is Laudable Pursuit? Laudable Pursuit is an examination of the state of Freemasonry in the United States and a plan of action for rejuvenating lodges in the 21st century, based on topics raised in the 1960s by renowned Masonic author, Indiana Past Grandmaster Dwight L. Smith, and then promptly ignored by the fraternity. This new work is intended as a starting point for the future direction of Freemasonry. Written by the Knights of the North, a Masonic think tank, and edited by Christopher Hodapp, author of Freemasons for Dummies, coming soon. So we're really excited about this. We started working on this over a year ago, but going back and forth trying to figure out how we wanted to do this and find the time to get all the voice talent together to do it was not easy. And, of course, we were lucky enough to get Chris Hodapp to agree to read some of it, and it's awesome. I've heard it. I read on the book project along with many other gentlemen, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. It's not some super long book. It is shorter, but it's going to be fantastic. I think the end time is 1 hour, 35 minutes, and 30 seconds is the complete length of this book. But again, we used this book at Space Novum. We used this book to kind of start Space Novum in a way, and it really inspired us. And Chris Hodapp was our big speaker our first year. We got Chris Hodapp to come out, and it was just fantastic. So, a huge thanks goes out to Chris Hodapp for putting this together and allowing us to do this and giving us a shot at putting it out there. And yeah, so we'll put links up as soon as this thing is available on audible.com. And that's it. So that's our big news this week. I just wanted to make sure that we let everybody know. Laudable Pursuit coming on audiobook. Now, of course, Chris lets that book out. It's out there on the web and on archive.org and everything. So if you want to just read it, you can. But I will tell you that by grabbing the audiobook, not only are you getting a cool project created by brothers, but it's also going to benefit this new library and museum of Indiana that Chris Hodapp loves so much and helped put together. So please consider that. All right, now the other big news. Mid-Atlantic Esotericon tickets went on sale.
Oh my God.
It's going to be crazy. We've got so many great conferences happening this year. If you don't get to one of these conferences, you are crazy, you guys. This is what it's all about. Masonic education coming to you. No matter where you are in the United States, there's going to be a conference by you. Well, where are they, RJ? Where are these conferences? Okay, we've got Attleboro Masonicon, we've got the Esotericon, we've got Camp Masonry, we've got Texas Masonicon, we have Cooperstown Masonicon, Chicago Masonicon. These things are all over the place. Now, granted, California Masonic, the Southern Pasadena Masonic Lodges Masonicon is not going to have a con this year in 2020. They are going to be doing it, I think, every other year, so 2021 will be the next one there. But there's so much to go to and to see, and if you can come to one or more, do it. Chicago Masonicon is, of course, the one that I'm putting together myself up here in the Chicagoland area for the Midwest. I do hope you come out for this, but if esotericism is like your jam, then Esotericon is the place to go. Or maybe you want to go to all of them, like Bill Short does. I go to most of them. So Esotericon is in Virginia, and that is going to be on, again, June 13th in Manassas, Virginia. They rented out a larger space this year because they sold out, and they sold out last year. We were at capacity. All tickets were sold. And as I understand it, they had a killer presale, and I think there is a significant chunk of tickets that are already gone. So you do need to get a ticket soon if you're thinking about going. This will sell out. I guarantee you this is a massive event, and it's really cool. And not massive in like you're going to get lost in the crowd. It's massive in sheer scope and philosophy of the idea. All these great esoteric topic speakers, and not always just like crazy esoteric like some guys think. Like if you're out there and you're one of these guys thinking, hey, this is a little too deep down the rabbit hole for me or whatever. It's not all like that, right? Like, some of this is philosophy. Some of this is contemplative in nature. Really good stuff. And I'm fortunate to know all of the speakers already. And all I can say is, wow. Get on it if you are thinking about having a chunk of time in June there to be able to go to a conference and you can make it to Virginia. Do it. It's going to be really cool. Oh, and I'm definitely going to go to this con. So I'll be there. And just like last time, I'm bringing my wife again. I'm going to get her to come out and we'll hang out and have a beer on Friday, I think. All right, let's get into this week's education. We're going to start it off with a piece by my friend and brother, Bill Woitis, who is a member of Evanston Chapter Number 144, Royal Arch Masons. And he wrote this piece about the Triple Tau along, I want to say 2013, or maybe it was 2012, because it was published in 2013 in the Illinois Lodge of Research. And it's an extensive piece. And as I go through this piece, it may help if you have the scope and the time to draw along with this paper as we read it, or to contemplate what we're building as we talk about the shapes that we're going through. But if not, you can just listen to this one too. It's not totally interactive, but it should at least get you thinking about a lot of the symbols, the shapes, and the numbers, and some of the significance. So let's go ahead and get into that right now. The Symbology of the Triple Tau in Freemasonry by Bill Woitis. What do you know about the symbol which represents the Royal Arch of Freemasonry? We often see the Triple Tau in logos for Royal Arch Masons, but what does it mean? What does it symbolize? Interestingly, it is closely related to the honorable symbol of the Blue Lodge, the square, compass, and the G. I need to begin by explaining the Triple Tau and what it is. The Tau itself is very old and is seen in ancient artifacts. It is not a symbol created by Masons, rather used by Masons for their purposes. It has deep and profound meaning, which I will try to illustrate in this paper. English Royal Arch Masons acknowledges six lights, three lesser and three greater, which are explained in our Blue Lodge degrees. These lights are arranged in equilateral triangles, each of the lesser bisecting a line formed by two of the greater, thus geometrically dividing the greater triangle into these three lesser triangles at its extremities and forming a fourth in the center, all equal and equilateral. This symbolic arrangement is related to the mysterious Triple Tau mathematically, which has two right angles at each of its exterior lines and two at their union in the center. In all, eight right angles, corresponding in number to the four triangles. To illustrate, four triangles equals a total of 720 degrees. Each single triangle consists of 180 degrees. Eight right angles, 90 degrees, totals 720 degrees, which is the equivalent of four triangles. This shows that the Triple Tau is a cryptic representation of the six lights and the pattern in which they are placed. Additionally, the pattern in which the six lights are placed and the Triple Tau contain the same number and sizes of lines, just arranged in a different manner. There are three long lines and three short lines which make up both symbols. This was often used to conceal reference to the symbol in the 17th and 18th centuries. This shows how the Triple Tau ties into Freemasonry by relating it to the arrangement of the six lights of English Freemasonry. Now, we need to take it one step further and show the deeper meaning of the mystic symbol. We will do this by relating it to a school of mystical philosophy known as Neoplatonism. Neoplatonism is a 19th century term for a philosophy which began in the 3rd century, based on the teachings of Plato and other Platonists. Two of the earliest contributors are believed to be Plotinus and his teacher Ammianus Saccas. Plotinus taught that there is a supreme, totally transcendent one, containing no division, multiplicity, or distinction, beyond all categories of being and non-being. His one cannot be any existing thing, nor is it merely the sum of all things, but, quote, unquote, is prior to all existence. Plotinus identified his one with the concept of good and the principle of beauty. Neoplatonism, a form of theistic monism, focused on the spiritual and cosmological aspects of Platonic thought, synthesizing Platonism with Egyptian and Jewish theology. To begin, we will need to illustrate a symbol known as the Tetractys. The placement of six lights in English Freemasonry creates a triangle, which we have shown to be related to the triple Tau, due to the corresponding number of degrees contained within. The Tetractys is also a triangular formation consisting of 10 points arranged in 4 rows, creating a total of 10 triangles. This is a geometrical representation of the fourth triangular number, which is explained as, quote-unquote, the nth triangle number, and is explained in a simple formula. The listener will need to refer back to the PDF, page 16, for this formula. The triple Tau creates 4 triangles. The fourth triangle number equates to the number 10, which is the Pythagorean representation of the Tetractys. So for our listeners, really quickly, I will interject. Imagine 4 dots across, 4 dots up, and the other side 4 dots up to create this triangle with 1 dot in the center. This is the Holy Tetractys. Back to the paper. The Pythagorean method of displaying the number 10 is the sum of the numbers 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4, and it presents the idea that the number 10 contained within itself the numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4. Each of these numbers represented a fundamental idea concerning the Pythagorean cosmos, examples being the natural world represented by 4, and 3 levels of higher, unchangeable reality called the hypostasis. The Pythagorean symbology is explained as such. 1. The first 4 numbers symbolize the harmony of the spheres and the cosmos. 1. Unity. 2. The dyad, or power. Limit. Unlimited. 3. Harmony. And 4. Cosmos. The 4 rows add up to 10, which was unity of a higher order, the decad. 3. The Tetractys symbolizes the 4 elements, fire, air, water, and earth. 4. The Tetractys also represented the organization of space. 1. The first row represented 0 dimensions, or a point. 2. The second row represented 1 dimension, a line of 2 points. 3. The third row represented 2 dimensions, a plane defined by a triangle of 3 points. And 4. The fourth row represented 3 dimensions, a tetrahedron defined by 4 points. We have heard concepts like this before in Masonic lectures, a point, a line, a superficies, etc. So this Pythagorean concept has been used by Masons more often than we realize, and these symbols hold deep Masonic meaning. Pythagoras maintains the power of the number 10 lies in the number 4, the tetrad. For this reason, if one starts at the unit 1, and adds the successive number up to 4, 1 will make up the number 10. 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 equals 10. The Tetractys, tetrad, and the number 10 were all very important Kabbalistic symbols. This same 10-point symbol was used by the Hebrew as the Tetragrammaton. Tetragrammaton literally translates to 4 letters, and is the Hebrew theonym, which is often represented by the Latin letters YHWH, otherwise known as the representation of one of the ineffable names of God in the Hebrew Book of Divine Law. The Hebrew Tetractys contains the 4 letters of the Tetragrammaton placed on the 10 positions of the Tetractys from right to left, using Jewish system of numerology known as Gematria, which assigns a numerical value to a work or phrase reveals that the sum of the numbers is equal to 72, a dividend of 10, and 720. At this time, it is important to relate the circle with the triangle. What most of us are not aware of is that two circles will form a triangle. This is explained through a Kabbalist symbol known as the Vesica Pisces, a shape that is created by two intersecting circles of the same radius. Mathematically, it is explained as the mathematical ratio of the height of the Vesica Pisces to the width across its center is the square root of 3, or 1.732.0508. If straight lines are drawn connecting the centers of the two circles with each other and with the two points where the circles intersect, two equilateral triangles join along an edge. This is another note to the reader. We're getting complex in this, and it's hard to follow along sometimes, but what we're trying to display here is that when the two circles come together, we can form, using the Vesica Pisces, the central line of a triangle, the midsection. And then when we draw straight lines through those and we connect them, this is the basis of the triangle. But also, it's important when we say the fourth part of a circle, that's where we get this. Let's continue. The triangle can be then extended beyond the Vesica Pisces by extending the lines through the corners to the opposite sides of the circle, and connecting these new lines with a horizontal line creates a larger triangle. In essence, it creates the triple tau triangle of the six-point arrangement of the six lights of Freemasonry. Again, complex stuff, but we have to remember, this is essentially the language of God, is it not? Mathematics, the rules of the cosmos, it's crazy stuff. Let's get back in. I have discussed the importance of the numbers 4 and 10, the circle, Vesica Pisces, and the triangle, as well as how the symbols have meaning in Kabbalah. We will now tie all of these separate aspects together into one very important symbol, the Sephirot, or the emanations. Geometrically, this is represented by four circles placed together in a position which creates 3, an important number in Masonry, Vesica Pisces. This creates a grouping of 10 enumerations, or emanations, through which God reveals himself and continuously creates both the physical realm and the chain of higher metaphysical realms. The 10-stage Sephiroth, in a singular, each stage is called a Sephiroth, is quite similar to the Pythagorean Platonic concept of the Holy Tetractys in description. It's often referred to as a representation of the Tree of Life due to the positioning of the Sephiroth. The Kabbalist Sephiroth teaches us that there are four planes of existence. One which relates to the divine plane, one which relates to the celestial plane, one that relates to the astral plane, and one which is the earthly plane. Platonists later associated the four planes with the elements, divine as fire, celestial with air, astral with water, and earth with earth. Later in the 5th century, Proclus Licinus proved an association with the concept of geometric progression as such, divine fire with a point, celestial air with a line, astral water with a superficies, and earth with a solid. His works are too detailed to summarize, but this will suffice for the purpose of the paper. There is the 5th plane, which is referred to as deity, or the universe, which encompasses and encompasses all, and is represented by the Sephiroth as a whole. In essence, the divine contains the point from which all light emanates, and is united with its source. Divine Chokmah, one of the Sephiroth, or the trait wisdom, that something can be created from nothing. The geometric progression as provided by Proclus brings that to the plane in which we exist on Earth, as a solid. Solids are related to the symbology of the triple tau, through the concept of Platonic solids, which are explained by Euclidean geometry as regular convex polyhedron. The faces are harmonious, regular polygons, with the same number of faces meeting at each vertex. There are exactly 5 solids which meet those criteria. Each is named according to its number of faces. The 5 Platonic solids, or bodies, are the following. The tetrahedron, 4 faces. The hexahedron, or cube, with 6 faces, the octahedron, 8 faces, the dodecahedron, 12 faces, and the icosahedron, 20 faces. Platonists associated the universe and the four elements with each of the bodies as illuminated in the below matrix. The elemental, planes, and the body. So, going across, we have the universe with deity and the dodecahedron, fire with the divine and the tetrahedron, air with celestial and spirit for the octahedron, water as the astral or intellect with the icosahedron, and earth, the earthly physical, as the cube. Platonic theory says that the universe and its subordinate parts, both animate and inanimate, were created by the deity from the four elements. Deity is the point that the Chokhmah teaches is the point where something was created from nothing. From the point to another point, a line is created. The line is necessary to create a superficies. The foundational superficies which can create a solid from itself is the triangle, rather, the tetractys. The tetractys, which we proved is formed by a single triple tau, is folded upon itself to form a tetrahedron. The triple tau is a symbolic representation of the superficies necessary to create the first three-dimensional Platonic solid. The six lights are a pattern for the tetrahedron. Each body is subsequently formed by a multiple of triple tau, such as 9. On the triple tau is the dodecahedron, 1, the tetrahedron, 2, octahedron, 3, icosahedron, and 5, the cube. We have related the tetrahedron to the divine, which is represented by the point. The Kabbalah teaches us that from the point everything is created. Platonic theory tells us that the universe and its subordinate parts were created by the deity from the four elements. The four elements are related to the four planes of existence and are thus considered the building blocks of the universe. That foundational body represents the point from which the building blocks of the universe are created, was itself created by a single triple tau. The point, as proven, represents deity, which further indicates that the triple tau is a symbolical representation of deity, that from which all was created. To this point, we have provided a progression which shows that the triple tau is a symbol of deity using philosophies and teachings known to be important to Masonry. Now, we will tie all this together with Freemasonry and not just a symbology important to the craft. There is a historical lecture in English Royal Arch degree which will tie the triple tau symbol in with the Royal Arch Masonry. The lecture is tied to the floor layout of a lodge of Royal Arch Masons with the knowledge that there are no masters of the veil in English Royal Arch Masonry. The lecture is as follows. This symbolical arrangement corresponds with the mysterious triple tau, which has two right angles at each of its exterior lines, and two in the center. In all, eight right angles corresponding in number with those contained in the four triangles. For the three angles of every triangle are together equal to two right angles. It also serves to illustrate the jewel worn by the companions, which forms by its intersections a given number of angles. These may be taken in five several combinations, and, when reduced to their amount in right angles, will be found equal to the five regular Platonic bodies, or points, representing the four elements and the sphere of the universe. So the lecture ties the bodies and elements to the symbol in Masonry and positions of officers of the Royal Arch Masons chapter. The triple tau symbolizes the excellent high priest in the east of the chapter and is a representation of the six lights of the Royal Arch Freemasonry. The tetrad, the light form, are symbolic of the gold plates found on the altar they surround, and it also forms the tetrahedron, the base solid. This ties the symbols to Royal Arch Masonry, but how can it relate to Blue Lodge? We know the importance of a circle as a fundamental geometric shape and how it ties to both Freemasonry and the triple tau. We have also proved the importance of the triangle to both the triple tau, the craft, and Royal Arch Masonry through historic lectures. Now we can tie this into Blue Lodge symbology. The compasses draw us the circle, and from our degrees we know that the points within the center of a circle, and from our degrees we know that the point is in the center of a circle. The square creates an angle of 90 degrees in Euclid's theorem describes how to create a 90 degree angle by drawing a triangle within a circle using a point within. We have proved that the triple tau is representational of the point. In Blue Lodge Masonry, you have the square with the compasses located over it and the G as a point in the center. We also know that the G is a symbol for both geometry and God, both the building blocks and creator of the universe, just as we have proven that the triple tau represents both deity and the foundation of the geometry creating the building blocks of the universe. Coincidence? All right. Now that you all have a certified degree in geometry, I would behoove you to download this paper, and you can get it directly from the Illinois Lodge of Research Transactions, or you can download just the singular paper of this portion of the transactions by getting them from our app. So you get our app on, you go to the podcast source, and you'll download that, search for Whence Came You within it, and then you can just press the little soft key button. It's like three lines, and there's some bonus features, and you can download the paper, and you can actually go through this and draw it out. Bill has some really nice illustrations that he's put together for this paper, and it will help you immensely as you go through it. I've read this paper three or four times now, and every time I read it, I understand a little bit more. Read it a few times if you need to. I hope I didn't give you a headache. And let's go into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison.
Not long ago, at the close of one of the Masonic bodies where I am a member, a brother stood up and gave us that ubiquitous reminder. Don't forget, we need petitions. I could make this a long diatribe by listing the reasons I joined the fraternity. Among those would not be, I joined so I could go out and get petitions. Like everyone, I'm happy to see new members join any part of our Masonic family. To me, a new member means a new friend, a new opportunity to share all the aspects of Freemasonry, new support for our programs and services. Unfortunately, when I hear, go out and get more petitions, it translates in my cynical mind to get more dues, get more donations, more money, and more dishwashers for the kitchen crew. If they breathe, drag them in and sign them up. A couple of days after that meeting, I sat down to read one of my dad's old Masonic magazines. It was from back in the so-called heyday of Masonry. Back then, the fraternity was thriving. They had over twice the membership we have today, and do you know what an article in that magazine said they needed? That's right, more petitions. Have I mentioned that's not why I joined the fraternity? Seriously, it's not what I want to do as a part of Masonry. Even though it's legal to, quote, ask in my jurisdiction, I'm still more of a to-be-one, ask-one kind of guy. I'm also not excited about advertising the fraternity or its related bodies. To me, the best way to get members is to demonstrate the worth of the craft by our actions. We have to be active and visible in the community and attract existing members to other bodies by showing them that the meetings are interesting, exciting, educational, and more than routine business transactions and a droning of the minutes. In my experience, that seems to be a prevailing point of view. I know because many times we discuss it among ourselves while the secretary is droning on reading the minutes. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right. So I'm not going to be able to talk to you guys for a few weeks, so we might as well check out some additional content this week, maybe something a little less heavy. Now, I mentioned in the beginning of this program that what's going on in my life, something along those lines. And, you know, one thing that I've been doing recently is going back through some of the readings that I used to go through quite often as a member of Builders of the Adytum or Boda. There are lessons that come out and you're caused to read each one several times and then move to the next as you progress through a series of lessons. And I started rereading all of my lessons in the hopes of greater understanding of some of the really cool philosophical truths that are contained within. I'm not trying to sell Boda, but if you're interested, you know, shoot me an email and I can tell you a little bit more about what Boda entails. But several years ago, my good friend and brother, my own lodge brother, my marshal for Spetsnovum is James E. Fry. He wrote an 8-part series on the occult lodge. And part 8 was the finale in the series. I would really recommend everybody go back and read these other 7 parts and then read part 8. But I wanted to read part 8 because it touched on Boda a little bit, and I thought it was a cool one, and speaks to the electronic age. So here we go. The Occult Lodge, part 8, by James E. Fry, 32nd degree, and he's a past sovereign prince of Jerusalem for the Danville Scottish Rite. Again, before I read this, I have read this on the show in the past, but it is a good piece, and in light of my current situation, I thought I would read it again. The ancient mystical order of the Rosicrucis, or Amor, is one of the more popular orders. This washed-down Rosicrucian system has claimed to be founded by Sir Francis Bacon, but in actuality was formed in 1909 by Harvey Spencer Lewis. Lewis claimed to be initiated into a Rosicrucian order in France, in which he received permission to transport these teachings in an American order. Amor tends to appreciate the Egyptian motif and has a fantastic foundation in alchemical symbolism in its system. But over the recent years, it has become more New Age focused. Still though, Amor has a plethora of information and education programming available to those who are interested. And for a beginner in esotericism, they are an excellent starting point. But if Rosicrucianism isn't quite your thing, maybe Martinism is. The traditional Martinist order, or the TMO, is considered by many Martinist groups to be the bane of Martinism due to their openness with Martinist teachings and the accessibility to its programs. Martinist teachings focus on being an unknown superior, and they value their discreteness due to its roots in the French Gnosticism. But the TMO is open for all to apply, aiding you with teachings rooted in the works of Saint Martin. They offer do-it-yourself mail-order degrees that allow you to make Martinism your own experience. Even many Golden Dawn groups will offer astral initiations on prospective members who are not in travel distance to an active temple. Another education-focused program one could peruse is the Builders of the Adytum, or Boda, founded in 1922 by Freemason and occult writer Paul Foster Case. Boda has been heavily influenced by both the Golden Dawn and ancient craft masonry. Boda is organized into regional study groups, which focus on the outer porch work, which contains a correspondence of programs, which is rooted in the main aspects of the Western Mystery School Kabbalah, Tarot, Alchemy, and Hermetics. But after completion of this first order, the student is presented an option to continue into the second order, or porch work. This second order is an initiatic school that uses the tarot as a basis for the aspirant to attain spiritual advancement. Over the years, the occult lodge has been largely reduced to online study and mail order programs that promise occult secrets but do not provide a community to support one's practical application of this knowledge. But what can Masonry learn from the occult lodge? Are we doomed to the same fate? With online education programs and Scottish Rite degrees on DVD, it is hard not to recognize that Masonry is following this trend. What can be learned from this occult lodge is that we must also provide an esoterically minded Mason with a community open to them using Masonic teachings and symbolism.
as a spiritual tool. Remember, there is nothing stopping masonry from being an individual spiritual path except the individual's perception of its symbolism. So, if you get an occult-minded young man interested in masonry for its mysteries, embrace him like a brother. Chances are good his interest in the esoteric has made him feel shunned by society, or even church. This might be why he seeks out masonry, to find that spiritual truth that he's not found in any other group. Allow him to make masonry into a system that promotes their own enlightenment. Young men like this need local lodges to fill the void because the occult lodge, for the most part, has faded into obscurity. But still, somewhere, they will always exist. In the dark corners of our mind, in the back of occult shops, or deep in the woods, there still are secret groups dedicated to spiritual awakening. Just as always, they have been hidden in plain sight. Alright, so a couple of points within this. I want to point out where Jim says watered down or a washed down Rosicrucianism system is amorc. I don't quite agree with that, and I don't think Jim does anymore either. So take that into consideration. I would focus more on his point that it is an excellent starting point, and in fact is a pretty good system. But also, if you are involved in AMORC or amorc, I would not, and if you have hopes of joining a Rosicrucian order in regular Freemasonry, I would not make it known that you're an AMORC member because it is highly unlikely you will be invited to become a member of a Rosicrucian order within regular Masonry if they know you're a member of AMORC or AMORC. There's contention there. And speaking of occult shops and hidden in plain sight, you know, here in Illinois, I have a wonderful place that you can go. It's the Theosophical Society headquarters. They have a wonderful theosophy section of books. The main building is still there. It's beautiful. It's well kept. It's not like dilapidated or anything. And I just went there, in fact, with the guy who directed and engineered Laudable Pursuit for us on audiobook. And he and I spent an hour or so in the bookshop. I picked up a few books for my kids. And a great little bookshop, not overpriced at all. So I would recommend it. If you're in the Illinois area and you've got some philosophical, esoteric leanings, then check out the Theosophical Society here in Illinois. It's a great place to go. I would almost encourage a lodge field trip. But I think that's it. I'm about ready to lose my voice here. Before I go, a special message from me and my family.
Happy Holidays!
All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for considering supporting this program. Don't wait. Get your tickets for MasonicCon Chicago. Go to www.masoniconchicago.com. Pick up your ticket, $125 general admission, $165 for our executive pass. We've got 11 speakers, 3 days, a meal together, a screening of a movie, all day on Saturday. I mean, 8 a.m. to probably midnight is what's going on. So this is a big, big deal. It's really going to be crazy cool fun, but it's next September. So save up for it or get your ticket now. Merry Christmas yourself, whatever you'd like to do. And don't forget about MasonicCon in Attleboro and, of course, EsoterraCon coming up there soon in June. And then just after that is like a floodgates are opening up. In February, I'll be at the con that's happening in Florida. So these are just all over the place. Great places to go out and get Masonic education. Go to a conference, or better yet, start a conference or start a one-day education thing at your lodge or something, and get a couple of your well-informed brothers to come out and speak on a cool topic. It doesn't have to be these big cons, but I mean, you could do it yourself, and that's what it's all about. So, yay, Masonic education, and that's it. So, have an amazing rest of the year, a great holiday season, no matter what you're celebrating, Christmas, the Yule, Hanukkah, Festival of Lights, any number of great holidays that happen this time of year, and that's it. I'm going to get out of here before I lose my voice. So, again, it's been wonderful. I will talk to you all in January. You have my deepest thanks, my absolute gratitude, and my love. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll talk to you all real soon. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.